If they came in saucers, why are we smarter? That's an excellent question.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to introduce myself. I'm the moderator. And then these guys from, I don't know you, so we'll start at the right this time.
Yeah.
Then after me, we'll go right to left, and these fellows will introduce themselves, and then we'll start blathering. My name is Brandon Blackmore. I'm a very small-town game author. Relevant to... I've got a superhero role-playing game just came out. Yay!
Did you turn on your microphone?
It is on. Yay!
Microphone.
Yeah, I forgot to record the last panel. It just sat there. I never turned it on. Relevant to this panel, though, I'm a huge fan of old bad movies, particularly bad 50s, 60s sci-fi. So that's what I bring to the table. To my far right, we have
Consortium 499. I'm a writer and a musician. My latest writing project is Pilgrims and Demigods, A Celestial Light, which deals with the end of humanity. So it makes for a lovely love story. And my latest musical project is Seek Forever. So that's me.
My name is Tony Finkelstein. I'm an independent film producer. My wife is a science fiction fantasy author. She is tables just outside the door. Go spend money. Thank you.
I'm the wonderful Billy Flynn from GeekRadioDaily.com. Like this gentleman here, I grew up in an era where there were three channels. I know, the kids nowadays. But Friday, Saturday nights, there was always your local all-night horror movie marathon
Shop
where I got
theater,
to see
feature.
The best and the worst.
Yeah, Manos, Hand of Fate, Them, you know.
All of these fantastic things. I love them. I've got a podcast for GeekRadioDaily.com. Nice. Which we discuss this and many other things and do fantastic interviews, and I'm lucky enough to also be a voice actor. So, and I love these movies.
My name is Steve Long. I'm a role-playing game designer and writer, and I have done a number of science fiction games, both my own stuff and licensed properties like Dune and Star Trek.
Wow.
That's cool.
All right. Okay. So
I got for 2 years, basically, I was a professional Trekkie.
Nice.
He
doesn't even know what the panel's about. I love this.
The best... No, I'm refreshing my memory. It's Sunday. So, best and worst endings of sci-fi movies, particularly B-movies of the 50s and 60s. So, I'm trying to read the subtext here of what we're actually supposed to be talking about. Because it's potentially a really wide field. But as I understand the premise, we're talking specifically about people who come here from elsewhere, and at the end of the movie, they lose. So that's basically what we're talking about, right? Okay. No? Okay. You have the floor.
Think about the title. If they came in saucers, why are we smarter?
Okay.
Meaning we're not.
Oh, I don't know, though.
Well,
it is a question.
The question presupposes that by defeating the aliens, we are smarter. I think we kind of got to run with that.
Yeah. Well, see, I think, and I'll propose this, and you let's start left to right this time.
Okay.
I'll propose this, that it's not that we're smarter, it's just that the reasons they came here put them at a severe disadvantage. We have a whole planet full of people and a whole planet full of resources, and they basically crossed the oceans of space in their saucers, and they only had what they brought with them. So... It's not that we're so much smarter. It's just that we have home field advantage.
Nice.
What do you think?
I would say, we also have the fact that the writers are on our side.
As far as we know, they're all human.
Reason, but I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, if I'm going to pick an example movie, as you said, the movie I'm going to pick, which isn't precisely that we defeated them at all, but that I think has an absolutely awful ending, is the classic "The Day the Earth Stood Still."
See, I was going to say just the opposite.
That's fine, but because I think that The Day the Earth Stood Still is a wonderful morality play.
Now, are you talking about the original or the new remake?
I'm talking about the original. There was no remake. We're just not going to pretend there was
no. No, there was not. There was not a remake.
Keanu Reeves did not star in a remake.
Tom Cruise was not in the War of the Worlds movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, we're talking the classic.
It, in theory, is supposed to be a morality play about you need to learn to get along with one another, and if you don't, you're basically children. You're not going to be let allowed into the galactic community. But the ending is basically. He demonstrates his power and turns off the electricity all around the world. You know, we still don't get it. He shakes his finger at us and says, "Shape up, or worse is going to happen," and then he leaves. That's not a morality story. What should have happened is the Soviets should have attempted to kill him, and he should have wiped Russia off the face of the planet and then said, if you want more of that, keep misbehaving.
But the Americans tried to kill him.
Yeah,
and almost and succeeded.
The communists actually have to be the ones.
Indeed.
Well, I think they get wiped off the face of the earth. It's an American movie. We're not going to let the communists win.
The thing that I liked about the ending of it is that it's showing that you can have a peaceful resolution. He didn't come to be to have a violent end. He came.
Give us a choice.
Yeah, but what I'm saying,
he wanted us to have a peaceful resolution.
He came to be the UN, and the reason that the movie doesn't work is the same reason the UN doesn't work. It's that it's toothless. It can't enforce its dictates. If he wants to lay down the law, he's got to do something to enforce the law.
But the whole point of getting to the galactic community is to do that through peaceful means. If he actually laid waste to the planet, he would be going against his principles.
But and he informed people that if you don't choose to play nice, people like Gordon will come and make your planet into a cinder. So play nice or die.
But you give that message and nobody plays wrong and dies, your story arc is not complete.
Well, it ends with...
I know how it ends.
People left to make a decision. It's made to make you think.
Yeah, I understand that it's made to make me think, but I think it's flawed in doing so.
The ending is totally up to us. The ending is not up to him. It's up to us making the decisions necessary to achieve membership in the galactic community. Now, we either eliminate ourselves, or we're going to have to find peaceful means in order to reach that level.
See, he gets it.
I actually think that The Day the Earth Stood Still is not a particularly good example of the kind of movie we're talking about.
It isn't, no.
And to me, here's what Day the Earth Stood Still reminds me of. It reminds me of those black and white films they would show you in elementary school. Johnny's faced with a problem. Does he cheat or does he get a low grade? What would you do? Yes, exactly. That's what it seems like. It's that movie with a flying saucer in it, you know?
Well, yeah. Now there's another one, and I'm trying to get the name right. It's Attack of the Flying Saucers.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, there's several. Yeah. There's Earth versus the Flying Saucers, right. which I think is like the archetype.
Yes, Earth versus the Flying. Because the guys who look like guys wearing brown bakelite suits with oblong helmets. Yeah.
And there were several similar. There was Invasion of the Saucer Men. And then there was Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Yes, that's on our list.
Which was actually a
paper mache crab or something.
They were
ping pong balls.
They were basically fungus people from outer space with eyeballs.
A black suit. Yeah.
And that was basically just a remake of Invasion of the Saucer Creatures.
Yeah, that's the guy with the needles came out of their fingers and they injected the alcohol into the teenagers. And,
Mm-hmm.
See, that's a great example of the title though, because a lot of the reason that we're smarter is because they're actually dumber than us for all this technology. Because the eye creatures come to this planet and they're killed by kids with their headlights.
Yeah, light kills them.
And it's like, we have a really bright sun that's here. Did you not factor that in?
Well, and see, my argument is that we're actually luckier. It's a matter of being lucky. If you look at the endings of a lot of classic science fiction, especially like War of the Worlds, what knocks out the enemy? What knocks out
God?
The invaders?
Microbes, fire arms.
Germs. Yeah,
we just get lucky.
We
in the
got
same way
lucky.
In Signs, the aliens who can be hurt by water somehow invade a planet that's 76% covered with water.
Well, this goes back to my home field advantage and why did they come here sort of thing. Because in most of these cases, you would think if they had their pick of places to go, the eye creatures would have gone somewhere where everything's like all soft and round and had no sharp edges, because they got eyeballs all over them. And that the people in Signs, they would have gone to like a desert, they would have gone to Dune.
Tatooine,
somewhere. So clearly they didn't have their choice.
Well, the thing that I think is their problem is that they didn't do sufficient recon. All right, when the Martians came here in War of the Worlds, they didn't send a scout team. They just invaded us, so they had no clue. They didn't even think of...
They were too pompous.
Maybe this planet has deadly microbes. Didn't even occur to them.
Well, maybe they didn't have deadly microbes.
Our worst take on that in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is that they had to leave. They were about to be destroyed. They couldn't take the time. And I agree with you. It makes no sense that they didn't scout the planet. Mm-hmm. And I think he did a good job of answering that question and trying to explain it for his own take on the setting.
Yeah. They had some pressure on their end that necessitated a very hasty invasion.
How about B? They come to steal our water when they go right past Saturn's ring.
No, they didn't come to steal our... They came to eat us.
Well, I'm talking about the TV show. No. Yeah.
Right, but they also were harvesting humans for food.
We are tasty.
With the right seasoning. Good with ketchup.
Well, yeah, but you don't suck the ocean.
9 out of 10 aliens agree.
You've got, you know, chunks of ice floating around in space.
Well, they okay.
You have to go past to
there's
get
a certain amount of you just have to go, eh, you know, the whole water, you know, you just kind of have
for
to.
A very boring movie.
Yeah, I mean,
it wouldn't have lasted long,
but
you know.
Good science fiction has to have good science.
Yeah, but see, if they
had
gone to
Saturn. Wait, were we talking about good? Am I on the wrong panel?
They
good
never
science
had,
fiction.
Good science.
They wait, would, no, no, no. We're talking
never
about
food.
Especially the B movie. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a twofer when coming to Earth.
Well,
they get the water and the food.
Can't have one without the other.
But let's just take it as a given that their particular nutritional requirements made interstellar ice unsuitable. Okay, let's just take that as a given. We don't know their biology. Do you know their biology? No, you don't. So let's take that as a given. Once they got here, how did we... it seems to me, didn't we all die at the end of V? Didn't they win?
Yes, since the show got canceled, they won, making it unintentionally one of the greatest endings of a TV series ever.
The aliens came and they ate us all at the end. So.
And just when Mark Singer was going to save us. Too late!
Okay.
Leave Mark out of this. He's a good guy.
Yes, he certainly is. That's what I'm saying. If Mark Singer had, if he got there an episode earlier, we would have kicked their ass.
Okay, so let's shift gears just a little bit.
Okay.
To the endings, how we beat them.
Okay.
In V, we don't.
No.
In War of the Worlds, they all caught the flu and died. You know, oops.
Didn't get their inoculations.
Oops, you know.
Well, now, in the miniseries, we did beat them. With the red dust.
Oh, yeah, okay. What are some other endings that you think were particularly, let's say, entertaining but bad, entertainingly stupid? Let's start with you.
Independence Day's got to be the worst ending on the planet. First of all, alien technology is completely different from our own. So, yeah, let's put a computer virus into completely alien technology that we have no clue how it works.
What do you mean? They had a saucer sitting there and they're... lab for 40 years.
Britt Spiner had been working on it.
But they couldn't duplicate the power source.
No.
Okay,
so they were only working with it
for a couple days.
The problem with that, though, is that the virus, there was no backup systems. There was no way to shut down just that one area that was affected.
They didn't do their research. They didn't know we had viruses.
And they had no backups at all. And it's like, if you're going to go and invade a planet, you're going to have redundant systems in order to... counter those kinds of measures.
I think that Independence...
I think you're also forgetting the giant nuke that they shot into the middle of the mothership that also has something to do with their lack of communications. So it wasn't just the virus. The virus was just, here, let's let them take down their shields for a couple of minutes.
But that's still, it's like, you know, something that simple, I just don't think that it would work. I'd buy the microbes at the end of War of the Worlds before I can buy... defeating them.
I would sort of assume that was because the Apple Corporation paid them a lot of money to have it work. But I agree with you, it makes no sense from a realistic standpoint.
Now, I'll point out something. Independence Day, much like V, and I'm wondering whether this is like a conscious modern attempt to shift the tropes a bit. Because that, you know, I don't want to assume more forethought from Hollywood than they actually deserve. But it's possible they planned it this way. Independence Day was a shift from your classic B-movie science fiction invasions, whereas their entire civilization came with them. That wasn't our planet's dying and this is the last vestiges, which is basically what happens in Earth versus the Flying Saucers. Their planet was dead, they needed somewhere to go, and they were running out of time. And that's kind of the subtext of a lot of these. Their whole civilization came with them. So it wasn't we only had what we could pack on the last weekend of, you know, our existence.
They were scavengers.
You know, I actually enjoyed that part. And I enjoyed the film all the way up to, like, the last 5 minutes when it was, like, pulling my hair out. It's like, yeah, great film. And you tack on this...
well, how would you have ended it? How would you have ended it? What would have been better?
You know, I think the aliens would have come and wiped us out. I think that really... If you were going to do a successful, if you were
you're
going to do
books about the end of the world, okay.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about an alien force that's far beyond our technological level, they have to take these things into consideration. And I think that they would have taken into consideration the fact that a virus could have been
You can be so smart and so intelligent and so advanced that the simple things elude you.
That's true.
You know, like trying to find terrorists in Afghanistan with drones. It doesn't always work.
Now, we mentioned earlier that the lack of recon. In Independence Day, they had done recon, but it was in the 40s. So maybe they realistically expected to encounter 1940s era technology.
But they should have also realized that if 50 years had advanced, 50 years in technology would have advanced as well.
Well, maybe the electric is static, and they're not expecting
I think if they drop in one line somehow explaining that their civilization took 10 times as long to get technology
that
we did, that would have explained everything. So many of these problems, it's just all you need to do is drop in one line and somebody's not thinking.
Mm-hmm. One line of dialogue.
Well, how would you have changed the end of Independence Day to make it more fun and maybe not more believable, but at least less annoying?
Well, to me, it wasn't annoying. I enjoyed it.
Oh, well, moving on then.
That I think did have an ending that had a lot to be desired was 2001 A Space Odyssey and 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, the ending is just a mishmash.
Well, the ending is meant to play.
When you ask 10 people what does this mean, and you get 10 different answers, that means whoever created it didn't have a clue.
The ending of 2001 is meant to be watched stone.
That's where the beauty of 2001
is. Yeah, but when Cair Durley goes from present age to senior citizen approaching death, back to infancy, back to the way he is, and visiting his mother on Earth.
Dude, it's like time has no meaning.
All because of an ebonite obelisk.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm sorry. Make your damn mind up.
That whole section seemed to be a different movie that was just stuck on the end.
Yeah, it's like, make your mind up.
Really?
What the sequence was about was demonstrating that the physical properties, once you get into that area, is different from our own.
Did you read Arthur C. Clarke?
Yeah.
You read 2001?
But my edit, Kubrick is basically doing his own take on it. And what I got from
Kubrick was stoned.
Well, that's beside the point. That matters not. You had to have been in order to make that film. But I think that the ending was just demonstrating that, you know, we're talking about a different plane of reality.
Exactly. And the human understanding to be able to, what they're doing, what they're saying.
Our human brains aren't supposed to comprehend this level of existence.
I mean, the baby, he's reborn. Sort of he's like a star child. He's a mesh of these two things. I mean, I totally get that. Granted, I've probably been stoned a time or two when I've watched it, but not the first time. I watched in eighth grade on a field trip in the public library.
Did you see it in Cinerama?
No, it was a public library in Goldsboro, North Carolina. Very, very small. It was not nearly what it should have been. But the next day in class, my science teacher apologized to us for taking us to the movie. Because he's like, I have no idea what that was about. Does anybody? And I timidly raised my hand. And they're like, well, yes. And the ending to me, I think, is absolutely brilliant because that's one of the most realistic of alien life that we don't understand. That's probably the best way you can explain how we would try to make some form of contact.
I agree. It was a beautiful depiction.
Itself, a line, somebody's point of view, when you're showing it to the general public, some kind of explanation what the hell you're looking at.
You're seeing him go inside.
What did you not like about the ending to 2010? You mentioned that as well, and that's a very different, more conventional ending.
Very different than the book.
Very different than the book. What I didn't like about 2010 was basically probably the whole precept from the time they get called back because Earth's now at war with each other, and then they piggyback the two spaceships to go back, and all of a sudden they get home, and now, boom, everything is hunky-dory. There's two suns, everybody's friends, There are no enemies. It's like nothing ever happened. Everybody's through with peace, love, and harmony.
Because we realize that there's more than just us out there, so why would we be fighting amongst ourselves when, well, God, something else is out there?
Okay. First off, the Soviet Union, I don't think, has that much intellect.
Well, okay. Stepping back a bit
from... The Iron Sheik would disagree with you.
Stepping back a bit from 2001, because it's a...
Polarizing?
It's a very different premise.
Right.
There aren't aliens coming here. They're basically aliens leaving calling
they're
cards.
They're aliens trying to prepare us for their arrival.
For going there, yeah.
Yes.
And I think what they're trying to say is that this is God, and that's a very poor way to...
But more to the point, human beings from Arthur C. Clarke's point of view are actually slightly better than human beings in the real world. So... I don't think that that's... I think that's part of the explanation. He's appealing to our better nature. In a very Gene Roddenberry-esque way, he's appealing to our better natures, not our worst natures. But anyway...
iRobot's another one.
It's another movie. You did your spiel on 2001.
Yes.
What do you think about Independence Day? What would you make... How would you end that better?
Okay. There's a lot wrong with Independence Day, but it's a very enjoyable film.
Yes.
I can forgive the ending of Independence Day because they're tied into our communication system, so on some level they have something that does access with what we're using. Because to me, the stupidest thing that happened in Independence Day happened in the first 20 minutes. They're in a tunnel, there's a fireball coming, they jump into a room, oh my God, where's the dog, is he going to get here? The dog jumps through the open doorway as the fireball goes by. I can completely buy the ending because that makes no damn sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it's why didn't the fire, as it's moving forward, expand
it's a
into the room?
Rule. You can't kill a stripper or a pet.
Yeah, that's right. Dogs have the hero death battle exemption rule pretty much every time.
Well, you can kill strippers, but it's a very different kind of movie.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah, the
back on track.
The fire that has no peripheral vision.
Yes. The stormtrooper fire. Yes.
Yeah. It ignores this opening where it can spread.
You have anything to add?
No, I guess I'm alone on the panel in not liking Independence Day at all from beginning to end. I didn't. Now, and to be fair to the people who made and acted in Independence Day, I was coming down with a stomach virus when I saw it, and that probably influenced my perception of the movie. But I didn't care for it, and if I were going to do that movie, I would have, you know, probably redone it from scratch somehow, and I don't know how precisely.
I mean, I have to agree with you. I absolutely really enjoy the movie as long as I'm not sitting there fact-checking.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you got to
check your
turn
brain
your brain off, right. Put it in neutral.
Not worry so much about, you know, their operating systems or, you know, that they passed
just watch the movie,
ice
enjoy
asteroids,
it is.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, well,
just kind of get
into that.
I expect at least primary school science, you know, kindergarten level science.
Education's bad in this country, don't you remember? Don't you watch the news? It's bad.
First off, you're watching a movie to be entertained. If you're watching it to sit there and critique it from start to finish, then why bother?
But I find excruciatingly bad science not entertaining. I'm sitting there going, it's a solar system, not the universe. It's a solar system, not a galaxy. You're going to use the terms, use a dictionary.
It's funny you should mention that. In a lot of Japanese science fiction films that have to do with outer space that are translated in English, apparently the words for planet and star in Japanese, it's apparently the same word, and you just pick it up by context. So you'll get Japanese movies that have been dubbed into English, and they're like, so, are you from another star? Yes, I am from another star, you know, and then they're talking about another planet. It's all very
smurf
weird.
Smurf me that smurf, would you?
It's all very confusing. Now, as far as end of movies and how we beat them, let's backtrack back to our classic era, back when, you know, men were men and women were women and, you know, the communists were the bad guys. You got a range of movies in there of varying levels of scientific verisimilitude. Or you've got Earth at one end, I would say, and then I'm going to open up to you guys. We'll go left to right this time. At one end, I would say you've got movies like... And I'm leaving out the Deus Ex Machina stuff like War of the Worlds, where just they caught the flu and died, and we had no real involvement in that. I'm thinking things where we had an active involvement in the defeat. At one end, you've got Earth versus the Flying Saucers. Scientist figures out their inertial their guidance systems, whips up a cosmic widget that you can mount in the back of a truck and aim it at them. Yeah. So, science, you know, maybe didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it was science, and we did it. And at the other end, you've got teenagers who turn on their headlights and turns out the aliens just spontaneously combust when you shine a bright light on them. So I would say that would be like the range there. Personally, I prefer the ones where it at least looks like science.
Yes.
What do you think?
I'm with you. I don't mind if there's a poof explanation, provided it makes some sense, other than, you know, light, for example. You know, and we have, you know, some it fits in the story properly, and we have some control over it, because it's not as much fun, as good as War of the Worlds is as a novel, when they die from microbes and we have nothing to do with it. That's not very heroic. If it's something we figure out and we figure how to use, I think that makes for a better story rather than a deus ex machina. Mm-hmm. But I tend to prefer something where we can be more proactive, like Radar Men from the Moon, which isn't a, nice. It's a, not a movie, but a serial. Where we basically end up mounting a sort of a military expedition to fight these dudes on the moon.
Yeah, it's only two moon guys.
Yeah, and you see the same thing in the...
There's two on the moon and one on Earth.
For my money, much less enjoyable recent movie, Iron Sky.
Oh, love me some Iron Sky.
Which is certainly meant to be taken in that 50s serial way.
Yes.
You know, but yeah, you know, I like to see, you know, the plucky scientist and the, you know, football quarterback and
Mando Cody.
You know, the dude, yeah, you know, getting together and fighting off the aliens. Or yeah, Flash Gordon, who, you know, in his original incarnation was not a football player. He was a polo player.
Yeah, that's a real man.
That's a tough game.
And of course, he goes off and then spends uncounted years fighting on Mongo, and we're never told whether the planet stopped moving and replaced ours. We're never told that. They just never get back to that plot point.
You have to believe
it. Wasn't
it.
In the budget.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you say?
I do like where people, even if the science is not completely perfect, I like where they actually try to be smart and realistic. The best and worst ending in one movie is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes.
Because the theatrical ending is a cop-out in which the audiences couldn't handle it, and Kevin McCarthy's at the end explaining to some cops, yeah, some alien green giant vegetables are here, and they're replacing everybody. Well, let's call the National Guard. Thankfully, they stopped them on the highway. Beautiful. But if the original ending is actually 2 minutes before that, where he's just running through the streets screaming because he's learned the truth, he's studied it, he's actually done some research, he's seen it happen, he has proof, but nobody's going to believe a raving lunatic, and that's how the world gets taken over. That's a phenomenal ending where they actually tried to do the right thing. I love that.
Do you see Day of the Triffids?
Yes, I did.
That's another one's got a bad ending.
The kid wakes up and the whole movie was a dream, and then he looks
Invaders from Mars.
Yeah.
Invaders from Mars.
That's a cool ending. You know,
got the little thing on the back of the neck. And
it's a Twilight Zone.
It's interesting. It's fascinating to see the professor and something else, though.
Yeah, Roy Hinckley.
Yeah, Roy Hinckley. It's a good time to see him there.
That's the great thing about watching old Twilight Zone episodes is seeing stars who went on to do completely different things playing other roles. Like, there's an early one that features Ted Knight, who played the goof Ted Baxter on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, as a hard-bitten starship crewman saying, no, leave that guy there. He just wants to waste our food. Screw him. He just wants to abandon this guy to die on a planet.
Hey, what do you think as far as human involvement and in the aliens' demise and defeat?
I when she brought up Rocket Men from the Moon, it's that my mind got stuck there. With Commando Cody flying around with his rocket pack.
Yeah.
Nipple one, nipple two, fly.
With a bullet helmet. And I got to stopping and thinking, and then you brought up actors that have gone on to do other things.
Clayton Moore.
Yeah.
You to his species.
You have Clayton Moore as the Moon Men's henchman, a criminal, you know, just
he's a
19...
To his species.
Yeah,
it's
just
planet.
Yeah, just a 1930s thug. And all of a sudden you watch it and you hear this voice. You're going, where's that coming from? We're not watching the Lone Ranger. But all of a sudden you go, ooh, there's the Lone Ranger without his mask.
I had totally forgotten that. You're right.
There's another one called Zombies from the Stratosphere.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy's Moon Man.
Yeah. Leonard Nimoy's
first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
like another Commando Cody film.
I'm not even sure he has any lines in that. He basically just goes underwater and then up into their little secret cave.
Actually, he's the one that tells the hero how to stop the bomb.
Oh, that's right.
He knew he needed Earth in the future.
It's been a long time since I've seen that. Let's go to you, and then this guy has a question.
Okay. With me, I first of all, I probably have to admit that the alien invaders come to Earth theme is probably my least liked of any plot in science fiction, because it is the least plausible for me. I just cannot buy the fact that here you have a race that has discovered interstellar travel and has gone to all the trouble of putting this mission together to go to Earth
and start a fight.
To start a fight and hasn't planned it to the T. Okay, if they had to have put everything, at all their planning into it, and they don't. All the aliens to come here, somehow, through nature or through luck or through some gimmick that we happen to throw out there, the aliens lose, and it's just from my realistic perspective, and I'm pretty much a realist. Is that I just can't.
Well, I'm kind of with him in one
any
thing.
Any of the reasons.
If you had the technology, you would spend it on invading another planet, stealing their women there.
If they're advanced enough.
Well, our women are pretty hot.
And then the question comes up, why would they want to come here anyway?
Yeah, that's it. If they're that advanced, why are you bothering with the monkeys?
You know, I can understand if people come here to just, you know, as tourists.
Oh, look, an amusement park.
Yeah, we're basically that. We're an amusement park with 60... with 6 billion
species.
No. Well, the typical explanation when there's one given, because a lot of times there's not one given. In Attack of the Eye Creatures, they never explain where the aliens came from or why they're there or whatever.
Watch the kids at Lookout Point. They've got the eyes for it.
Yeah. Although they do allude to the fact that it's happened before. Mm-hmm. And so apparently just periodically they just come here
and die,
you know. But as far as the explanation when there's one given back in the classic sci-fi is usually their planet's dying.
Yeah,
that's invasion. Earth versus flying saucers. They came right out and said that.
Trying to justify that
they had actually been looking for a planet to settle on for a while, and that they are basically out of options.
We're easy pickings. I mean, really, we haven't even gone beyond our solar system, so we don't stand a chance.
In less intergalactic stories, even War of the Worlds, Zontar, the Thing from Venus, and the Roger Corman version, which came before that, which is actually slightly better, has one of the worst endings ever. The vastly powerful Thing from Venus, the alien cucumber, it can control time and space and turn things off. Lee Van Cleef kills it with a brazing torch.
Yeah,
so that's pretty much the lamest... The
but
lamest
Peter
villain ever.
Speech makes up for it.
He learned too late that man was a feeling creature. He learned too late for himself and others. Man, anyway.
Call that gentleman the very best.
Yes, I'm the moderator. You.
The moderator.
I'm moderator.
He's the moderator.
What are your thinkings on the ending of that great modern classic Battlefield Earth where they blow up the entire invader's planet with radioactivity and it's alerted to?
No. Look. That doesn't even matter. Battlefield Earth doesn't make any sense at all once you realize you can go to a library and still flip through pages that are completely fine and they're not brittle, and they say picto cameras. Man animals. What the hell? They don't even need the ending. And the movie only has one scene change. The Star Wars open door. No. You don't even need to get to the ending to say how stupid it is. The whole movie's stupid. It doesn't even make sense. Dismissed. Battlefield Earth is dismissed, sorry.
Okay.
That gentleman, a very nice man, trying to ask a question.
He's got
and
a point to
we'll
make.
We'll get to him in a moment.
You said that a moment ago.
That guy was first. Don't
make him bring the Dalek back.
Yeah, all right. Battlefield Earth, even as a connoisseur of bad movies myself, you got to draw the line somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, come on. I will tell you one good thing about Battlefield Earth that I liked, and maybe you'll disagree, maybe you won't, and then we'll move on with the question from the back. I actually liked how they shifted the perspective, and it was not subtle, but I liked how they shifted the perspective. When you're viewing the movie and the main characters are the aliens, the humans are portrayed as very monkey and they're very bestial from the aliens' point of view. And then when the humans are the main characters, the aliens are basically, you know, space Klingons. Or, well, I guess that's redundant, Klingons.
Yes.
And I thought that was kind of a nice touch. It's really the only positive thing I can say about
it. It got lost in the scene change.
Yeah. Fell in the back. He's waited for so long. So very, very long.
I don't know if you guys have talked about this because I came in a little late, but it seems like even in science fiction movies where the alien contact is, for the most part, peaceful, it's always so very cryptic when they first contact us. Like Contact.
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster.
Matthew McConaughey. All right. Or like Close Encounters. The first contact is always so vague and strange.
Well, Close Encounters, the whole thing.
I just don't understand why they don't realistically portray a first contact situation.
I think part of it is that they're a completely alien species, so I don't think they understand our way of thinking. They're trying to go by their way of thinking.
I think that's certainly part of it in Close Encounters. I think actually in Contact, it's the exact opposite. They're trying to communicate in the best way they know, which is the universal language of mathematics. They understand, the aliens do, that we don't comprehend their perspective. But everybody has to know math. Yeah. And the laws of math are the same throughout the multiverse, apparently, in Sagan's setting. And therefore, the only way we know we can communicate with them is to send them mathematical instructions to build a radio or a travel tunnel or whatever it is.
But why send her back with no evidence? Why send her back with just like that contact? I am
absolutely unable to answer that question because I don't quite understand that myself.
Yeah, and a lot of.
I haven't read the novel though, so I don't know if it ends differently. You know, does anybody know?
No, I haven't read the novel, but I did see the film. But in the film, at the very end, where she's in front of this panel and they're judging her to see if she, you know, because of what they think is a failed mission, the one dude who was put in charge of all the scientists, who'd worked his way up to the top, is still being very sneaky and very secretive about some information. So obviously there was some proof that the government's trying to hide. And they're trying to put it off on her like she screwed up.
8 hours of static. When it should have only been, you know, 6 seconds of her sitting in his seat.
Nixon's secretary got hold of it.
But my point is, like, I hate to make the analogy, but, like, in Star Trek, they have a prime directive and they have specific protocols for first contact. And in every science fiction genre I've read, that always seems to be the most reasonable one. Watch them for a little while and then come to them peacefully. And I rarely see that.
Well, in Close Encounters, it's like the general on the end said, it's mathematics trying to communicate because the audible tones and the light frequencies was all based on mathematics.
Oh, okay. I
see. Yeah, I don't think that message comes through. At least it didn't come through for me as clearly as it does in Contact, but I agree with you. There was some purpose to the do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah. And our government is the first people.
Knows what that means with no actual.
Apparently, a French keyboard player was the.
And somehow that's
Because they had to find the right tones and the right light frequencies, and that's mathematics.
Well, if I say hello to you,
well, what does it mean?
It means hello.
Harmonics.
No,
how the hell are you?
It means hello. If I'm in another country and I can stumble upon the word for hello, you say hello to me.
They got hello,
right?
And then they start playing, a symphony back and forth as if
they sent a shit ton of information to us through that blew out our systems because they thought, oh, you understood the handshake? Here, take it. Oh my God, we fried you.
Yeah,
you know, and another sense. We're going, hey, how are you?
How are we doing on time? From another,
we got 50 minutes.
Yeah. From another point of view, which is like taking a step back, if the aliens introduce themselves and you know, oh, okay, yeah, we're from there. Oh, we don't want to kill you. We just want to, you know, get some water. We're fine. Okay, that's kind of how V started, right? But clearly, you know, anybody who just comes right out and tells you what they want, they're actually lizards in disguise. Yeah. So in order for there to be any possible doubt about their evil intent, there has to be an error in communication. Also, otherwise the movie would end really, really early. So you basically have the first half hour wondering what the hell's going on.
You have that whole beginning with all these people who were touched mentally. Mm-hmm. They got the music and the image of the Devil's Tower. Yep. Okay. But then when he finally gets, and the government is throwing all the roadblocks for no reason, when
to keep us from the truth.
Turns out the government knows all this stuff.
Yeah, they've known the whole time.
What's the purpose of doing all this mysterious communication?
Because they tried to talk to our government, and our government doesn't want to talk to them because our government automatically sees them as a threat. So we've got to just talk to everyone, anyone that can hear our message.
Yeah. I didn't get that from the movie.
You've got to learn to let these things go because it's there. I promise you, it's there. Watch it again. It's there. I swear to you.
Okay,
but in other movies,
all of that work to get there and understand why he's building mashed potatoes and you know all that stuff.
It means
and
something.
When he gets there, the government's there anyway. Mm-hmm. What the hell? Were we following?
The truth is out there. That's
yeah, but all the people that got the light shined on them and got the suntan were all seeking that devil's peak.
Those were the ones that were being called.
And they didn't succeed because the government was stopping.
Yes. Basically, the space chandelier was an early version of WikiLeaks.
Nice.
See, they were trying to get the message out to people who would actually do something with it other than keep it to themselves.
Occupy planet Earth.
There you go.
There you go. Spot,
now, sometimes
the people who want the truth will seek it out no matter what.
Okay, just 1 second. Now, sometimes the errors in in Close Encounters, clearly they had some vastly different way of communicating that just made clear communication problematic. In some movies, the communication breakdown is a little more clunky. So, like in Earth versus the Flying Saucers, they transmitted an entire, you know, here's where we're going to be, here's where you want to be, we're going to meet, we're going to talk about stuff. But apparently, because of their vastly dissimilar time perception, it was like way, way sped up. So it's not until an hour later in the movie when this tape recorder's batteries are dying. The adventure slows with greetings, people of Earth. You know, and they can actually understand what's going on. So if only they'd had audacity like an hour earlier, they could have figured out what the message was. You know, so that's kind of...
They have a similar thing in the TNG episode, The Nth Degree, where Reg Barkley becomes superhumanly intelligent because it's how the aliens are transmitting to them how to build the device that they will need to talk to them. And after that's all gone
through... Well, it was Matt Frewer, right?
Yeah, and the Enterprise is nearly...
The holodeck addict.
It turns out to be a great peaceful contact with the Cytherians, and everybody's happy. They go on to exchange cultural and, you know, technological data, and the Federation fulfills its mission.
Yay! This fella had a question.
Do you think if we really were being pursued by alien life, and, you know, I think it's totally, totally likely possible, do you think... that their pursuit of us, if they were around here and are, that they would be volatile or combative?
Oh, I have a definite opinion on that, but I'll spare it. Let's start this guy in the end.
I think that they probably wouldn't need to. I think that we're our own worst enemy. So I think that they will find a way for us to pit each other against ourselves before they would come in.
The monsters of industry.
Our first reaction is to resort to violence. And a classic example would be back during the Cold War, where all they'd need to do was just cause an explosion over either the United States or the Soviet Union, and we all know what was going to happen. And then they'll just let that happen, and then they can come in. Hopefully that there are species that could tolerate high levels of radiation. But really, yeah, I really don't think they'd have to put too much effort into it.
What do you think? Would visiting aliens, would they be violent?
Well, no. My thing is, if they're intelligent enough to build a vehicle to cross interstellar space and get here, and they're that knowledgeable and that advanced, what the hell do they want to come here and start a fight for?
Well, that's what Pierce Brosnan said in Mars Attacks. Clearly they're intelligent, which implies they're peaceful.
It's funny.
Well, I'm not implying that they're peaceful. I'm saying, but... To look at where they're at and look at us on this planet, they're going, what the hell do we want that place for? That's a garbage dump.
I think it comes back to one of our earlier conversations where maybe this is the closest planet like theirs, and they're just revolving around a dying star, and they have to come to us.
If we look historically, if we assume, and this is not necessarily a safe assumption, that space travel can be analogized to human exploration of Earth. If you look at the Europeans, the Western culture that we grew up in, exploring the rest of the world during the second millennium and part of the third, people go to other places for a reason. Initially, that reason is just to find out what's there. But then the reason if they keep going back is usually for some economic reason, and inevitably that tends to lead to whichever side is culturally or technologically dominant taking control one way or the other, be it military, financial, or what have you. And as a result, the tiny island of Great Britain ends up literally ruling a quarter of the planet. So if people are going to, if aliens are going to come here, they've got to have a reason. I don't think that the reason is initially going to be conquest, but I don't think that the outcome, if they are obviously superior to us, is going to be to our benefit. I think that even if they come to trade with us, we're going to end up, we'd end up being dependent on them, or they will, in a mercantilist manner, decide that we can't, we must provide certain raw materials
small
to keep their economic engines going.
Class.
Yeah, it's. I think it is not necessarily, it might be enormously helpful in other ways, in the same sense that, you know, when the Europeans came into certain areas, people would then learn how to read. But, and ultimately, their standard of living would be raised. But the fact is, you have to go through a lot of havoc and a lot of cultural turmoil and a lot of death and disease and horror to get to that elevated plateau.
So basically, the aliens have to turn a profit.
Yes.
In order to
people of Earth, shop or die.
Yes.
That is an excellent way to look at it. If aliens are out there and they come to us, I believe they will come under the prospect of peace, or at least we're not being aggressive. We just want to know what's there. It could very easily turn into that because we certainly did as human beings in places that we went. But even if they do come here with insidious purposes intentionally, they're still going to present, you know, the fig leaf to try to be good. Mars Attacks is something I wanted to bring up because it's the best 50s movie made in the 90s, and it's the best way to kill aliens. Even if they're going to be nice to us so they can trick us and kill a mass majority of us, we always have country music to get rid of them.
I was just going to say, it needs country music.
Yeah.
Miss Liddy?
If they have the technology to come, wouldn't it be more like the Chinese who had this huge armada explored? They think they got it from America. And they basically went home and said, nobody has anything.
There's nothing useful out there. Let's go away.
Stay home.
Yeah.
I've been there. Let's stay.
Admiral Zhang, sleep.
I mean, it would be really ego-destroying. But wouldn't that be more likely that they would see what we have? And
that'd be a great movie.
Well, yeah.
that's kind of his
Europeans who were more technologically advanced than the Aztecs or the Aruba or in some aspects the Chinese found things they wanted at those places, but they tended to be raw materials. So we could easily be broken down for our component parts and sold off.
You know, it's like, why bother?
If aliens came to Earth to uplift us, would we fight it?
Of course we would.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they come to uplift us, they're going to uplift us into their prison.
Where's the profit in that? I think it comes back to that. I think
new markets.
Well, most of the uplifters did it to get slaves, so...
Yeah. You, sir.
I just wonder if you all have seen the 27th day. Speaking of,
I have not.
Really bad endings.
No, I haven't actually.
So the premise was that the alien ship from the dying planet came down, kidnapped five people from different countries, gave them something that, if they use it within 27 days, would destroy 1/5 of the human life in one area.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
After 27 days, it would be inert. So they give one to a guy in Russia, one to a guy in America.
Oh, I remember that film.
China.
And one, they're about to use it.
Everybody who has a permanent seat.
And they're all about to let that thing go, and they all go at the same time, like, no, let's not.
No, the Chinese girl just simply kills herself, and her thing goes in her. The American guy goes into hiding, and the British girl goes into hiding. It's Jean Barry from World of Girls, in fact. The Russian gets caught, and they try to make him use his on America. And the fifth guy is a scientist who finally figures out, and this is your worst ending of any movie I've ever seen, we can make this work so that we'll only kill bad people. So all the communists that are the bad communists are killed, the hero Russian soldiers survive. But all the evil people
die. They also not kill unless they're bad.
And then they say, hey,
they were all
guys,
bad.
We didn't kill ourselves, but you can still come down and join us.
Wrap it up. Any last minute questions? You.
It's not exactly a question, but I just wanted to say that I think that the reason why a lot of us, and myself included, like those old 50s and 60s movies, and it's a theme that occurs all across the board, even outside of science fiction, is that we like the underdog to win. It seems to be like a borderline thing. Everybody loves the underdog. So whenever you have some alien coming to this planet, the first thing that we're looking for whenever we watch these films is to say, okay, we know the underdog is us and we're going to have to win somehow. And so no matter how bad it is or implausible it is, we want to win.
Yes.
And we're going to come up with that somehow or other. And I find that films that are written by authors that have been translated, if they're more faithful in how they're translated to film, they're usually more interesting in how they go about doing that. And but again, you know, sometimes Hollywood gets their hands on it and they're appealing to our gut instinct. And because of that, they're going to give us what they think and we want on a very basic level.
So it's not that we're smarter, we just have more ingenuity.
Yeah, yeah.
We got moxie, baby.
Yeah, they're smart, but by God, we've got that human spirit. We're going to figure out a way. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But
truly.
We have to figure out a way because nobody wants to go see these films.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the movie Midway.
An awful lot of science fiction and even like the Marvel Universe posits that there is something special about humanity.
Well, no.
The doctor thinks so.
Well, if you look at the film, the old World War II film, Midway, where they're, you see the Japanese side, then they switch back to the American. The Japanese, this one commander of his naval vessel is looking at the head guy and going, "You don't want to awaken the sleeping giant," referring to America.
Yeah, Admiral Yamamoto said that. Said after they bombed Pearl Harbor, he's supposed to have said, it can't be proven, that I fear that all we have done is awaken a sleeping giant and given him a vast resolve. He had been a diplomat in Washington. He knew what Americans were like, and he was absolutely right.
And that's the premise of the science fiction films. They're coming down, and all of a sudden they've awakened the sleeping giant, and everybody pulls together and says, to hell with you, we can fight each other, but you don't have any say in it.
And yeah, it's ultimately the human spirit defending their home turf.
Yeah,
that's
I can
really
pick on my brother, but you can't.
Right.
Hey, thanks everybody for coming. Hope it was entertaining.
Yeah.